Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and one of the people I truly appreciate having on the show on a regular basis is here with me today, Dave Eggers, whose new book, The Parade, has been published by Knopf. And this book really surprised me because it's so different from the last book. We had a great time last time learning that Yemen is the home of coffee, and now we're abroad again in an unnamed country where two men have been sent to pave a road that connects the north and south of a country not named, that has endured a civil war. The people who live in the South have suffered from not only rape and death and terrible events during the war, it's been years since they've had access to sufficient medical help. And so these people from an industrialized country, two of them, have come to pave the road. One of them has been involved with some 63 such projects. The other is doing it for the first time. They're meeting each other for the first time, saying, choose a number between 1 and 10. And one chooses 9 and one chooses 4. And there will be, for the longest time, almost to the end, no names named in this book. Not the names of country, not the names of character. Why?
Well, the original motivation was to not have it reduced to any one time, any one country, any one conflict. Because to me it was an amalgam of a lot of things I've seen, experiences I've had, countries I've been in, and I didn't want us to automatically think, which we always do in the United States, that it's about us for good or ill. Like, if we are, and you know, despite whatever care I tried to take with it, people do, I think, automatically assume this is about American interventions or American adventures abroad or hubris. But you know, this started, God, 12 years ago, I think. I was in South Sudan with Valentino Deng, and we saw a road being paved in what had been a war zone. And the crew that was doing it was Swedish. And we thought, I thought, that so odd, so incongruous, and unnecessarily strange. They paving companies in Kenya, there's paving companies in Uganda, all these nearby countries. Why import these Scandinavians to pave your road? But I got interested in contractors from thousands of miles away that are dropped in with almost no interest in or awareness of the local geopolitics, and they just are there to do a job.
Well, imagine. I saw this as a Beckett novel rewritten in terms of geopolitics. Mm. So it was extremely interesting to watch this book take its shape with no access to the usual kinds of information that a book provides. Where is it taking place? Who are these people? We learn very late that one of them is married. The other man, 9, is not a family man at all. He is there to really, he's on vacation in this geopolitical wasteland. He's saying, why are you eating those energy bars and that terrible oatmeal mix when you could be eating this amazing food they have here? And he's sampling the food, but unfortunately, he's also sampling the daughters. And so, in a certain way, we've got two characters, both of whom are trying to escape from the book they're in.
But they do represent types that you do encounter. I mean, in all the NGOs that I've sort of stayed with and traveled with and over the years, you do see these two guys. You see Four, who's like a veteran, all business. He's there to get the job done, and he's not there to engage in the local population or to fix anything beyond his scope of work. And then there are the adventurers. It's almost always their first trip that you encounter these guys. And they are chaos makers, and they think that they are on vacation. But, you know, so many of the issues here or in this unnamed setting play out in so many dozens of other situations, especially right now when you have, especially with China doing their Belt and Road project all over the globe, building ports and railways and oil refineries and roads. The character Nine, who just, it's so much of his engagement is coming from a genuine love. Feeling like, A, he has so much to offer, you know. He has a love in him that he wants to spread liberally around. And there's a naivete, though, that's key, and that's what causes so much harm, I think, when he doesn't think beyond his immediate gratification.
So you never, in fact, know who is going to turn out to be a preening hero,
yeah.
And who's going to be working for the sake of a newly ended civil war. The North and South have settled, but how do you heal a decades-old enmity?
Yeah.
And they're trying. And what is supposed to happen? Well, what's supposed to happen is indicated in the title of this book by my guest, Dave Eggers, which is published by Knopf. The title of the book is The Parade. And when the road is finished between North and South, there's supposed to be a parade. And these two workers are expected to have the road finished by the time of the parade. There's a brand new machine. Now, does this machine really exist?
It's so funny. It's the only time I've done research into paving in my life. I never thought I would be there. But I wanted this, you know, I had the book in my head for years. And then about 10 years ago, I mean, ever since that first trip in South Sudan, it wasn't my first trip, it was my third, but it was the one where I saw this road being built. And, but I thought, I can't keep track of 12 characters and 16 trucks and all of this equipment that normally goes into it. So I looked online to see if I could find what is the next generation paving machine is, what is the fewest people you need. And Volvo actually had done like an animated prototype of their ideal future machine, which could be maintained by one person, just one guy in the cab. There are such machines in the works that reduce what looks like a circus, you know, all those trucks and all this sort of antiquated looking machinery that goes into paving the average road and makes it streamlined and tidy and kind of like a giant Zamboni, you know, instead of paving or cleaning an ice rink, it's paving a road.
And so what we're watching, dare I say it, is that a novel written from the modern geopolitical point of view has the ambiguity of a novel by Kafka or Beckett, that we read this book and it does strike us at every moment as being both realistic and unregulatable. You know, these two men are all of us who face the inability to work together. Neither of them is there out of a sense of empathy for the people of this country. Our hard worker has been told and believes, don't interact with native populations. Don't eat their food. It's not good for you. Don't go in their water. It will give you malaria. And so he is keeping his distance. The other can't resist. He'll splash right in. And by the time we are seeing him toward the final pages of the book, he's paying the price of being someone who splashes right in, who is engaged with people whose customs he really knows nothing about. So, far from being a political book, I see this as a tragically human book about how we live in a world in which we no longer know how to know one another.
Thank you. You got it. I mean, so much of the themes in it, I guess, resonated. I mean, they were gestating for decades for me with just experiences in travel. I didn't have a passport till I was 26. And then my first trip, I think, was in the Amazon. So I went to a 10-day boat trip down the Amazon, stopping at villages along the way. And just that was my so radical education to see both how our local guides treated the villages and the local residents that we met, how the other, you know, Westerners and tourists on the boats interacted with everybody. There were all these shades of sort of experience where, and none of them felt right. Inherently, the power balance felt so wrong. Everything felt, it was a really fraught trip. It really just broke me in half in a lot of ways, even though it was beautiful in so many ways. But just the inability to find the right way to know each other. Just like you said, whether it's your partner in this, because there's a chasmic gap between these two men, that four, the man in charge, just loathes nine, everything he represents, and all of his, the vortex of his chaos, you know.
And nine is saying, oh, come on, it's nighttime. Your food is all powdered and in little pockets. Let's go eat. They've sacrificed a lamb. Yeah. Do you know what it means for these people at this hour of their world to sacrifice a lamb to us because we're building a road for their unification? Yeah. It would be rude not to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
there's just enough knowledge on Nine's part to do real damage in a lot of ways. Just enough, because again, he means well, but without any, I think, actionable empathy, you know, without any real deep knowledge of where they are, he is capable of real harm. I did want it to be timeless in that this is a dynamic that's been playing out for centuries and will play out for centuries too. And I just didn't want it to be, you know, reductive to thinking we Americans, we think whether it's all the ill in the world we think we're responsible for it or all the good in the world we're responsible. It's never anything in between with us. We always feel like it's us. The Chinese are the ones that are, you know, building the world's infrastructure right now, and that it's not, and it won't be, all about us. You mentioned Beckett and Kafka, and after I finished a draft of the book. I gave it to a writer named Noel Tong, who's South Sudanese and has done some work with McSweeney's. He actually edited the first collection of South Sudanese fiction for us. And I gave it to him, and he said, oh, this is like Waiting for the Barbarians, the Coetzee book. And I thought, I hadn't even connected it, that he had done the same thing of sort of...
Oh, that's so interesting.
We assume it's about colonial power in Australia vis-a-vis, you know, the indigenous population there, but it never says where it's set or when. We get a few clues here and there, but that sort of removing that from it gives it a timelessness.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Dave Eggers about his new book, The Parade. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Dave Eggers about his new book, The Parade, a minimalistic, merciless, and timeless story about complex moral and ethical issues. Now, you mention Coetzee, or as some people say, Coetzee. Coetzee, who wrote what was basically, although not his first book, it was his first significant book in America, Waiting for the Barbarians. Mm. He'd been teaching in Buffalo, where I went to school, a course in literature and linguistics. He asked us, all semester long, to diagram and understand the sentence structure to Beckett's Imagination Dead Imagine, which, when pronounced the way you ought to pronounce it, goes, imagination dead, imagine.
Yeah.
And the self-contradiction, which interested Coetzee, the author of the Nobel Prize-winning body of work that began officially, although he'd published two books before, with Waiting for the Barbarians. He is a marvel, and yes, this is that kind of book.
There's that incredible specificity of place in that book. You feel the dust and the, you know, the heat. There's a tension to it that is, that borders on dread at all times. And I think you feel that. There's only some books that can claim to have really achieved dread. It's hard to write a minimalist book in a way. But I wanted this to be stripped of anything extraneous. I wanted
it
to be
really
taught.
Or anything really exotic.
Yeah. I was just rereading a lot of Sam Shepard's work, too. I had to write a tribute to him. I was very grateful to be able to do it. And, you know, he's written 50-odd, 60 plays or something. So there are so many that aren't familiar to everybody. But there's such a through line between, well, Kafka, but especially Beckett. Obviously, that was his hero. And when you see, I don't know if anybody could be called the American Beckett more aptly than Shepherd.
Can I tell you my favorite Shepherd play?
Yeah.
Absolutely love it, both on page and in performance. There's a play called The Unseen Hand. Mm. It takes place in Azusa. Repeatedly, they say everything from A to Z in the USA. And some cowboys are talking about a situation. They've just come back from some place in the solar system where they've attempted to rescue the creatures, the people who live on another planet. Most notably, the most dangerous of all, Willie the Mutant.
Willie the Mutant.
And he, the mutant, who's come down to Earth with them, with these cowboys. So it's what Shepherd loves, cowboys and science fiction together, Western and science fiction, and Bully the Mutant says about the unseen hand, "Every time I think beyond a certain circumference, the hand comes and squeezes on my braid." And I thought, wow. Yeah. I mean, that's the condition of human limitation. In other words, no matter what, we're who we are, very little we can do about it. It's sort of our punishment.
I was writing, some passages about when I was an art student, and I was a painter, you know, and this is exactly what I've been writing about, like the last few days, is having the picture in your head that you want to create on the page, and having almost enough talent to do it, but it can't, you cannot make it. That was actually why I eventually left painting, because I never got it right. I could not create what was in my head on a canvas, but with the grit, and also with painting, you can only work a canvas so many times before you have to start over, and because the canvas won't take any more paint, really. It becomes glossy, and you have to start with a new canvas and prime it. But with a book, the beauty of it for like a laborer, like I think I end up being, especially with a book like this that was 10 years or so in different drafts, it can bear those repeated rewritings. You can strip it down and start over, and you can get closer, or at least I feel like I can get closer to what I originally envisioned. And with this one, I knew the shape of it 10, 12 years ago, and then it was just a matter of like, what is the tone? What is the style? What is the level of tautness? All of those things, you can sort of distance yourself and go at it both as writer and editor in a way that painting doesn't really allow.
Boy, am I lucky. I couldn't have said it better myself. But the pleasure for me in The Parade is that the book has a sense of comedy that it sort of wanders onto and then says, and pulls itself back and doesn't let you take refuge in easy comedy. Yeah. Something awful has happened. It's awful all the way through the Civil War, the corporate solutions to the problem, people who get paid to intercede in another nation's values and understanding. Civil war, I mean, already among people who have decided not to understand one another, to have some outsider sent to say, I have nothing to do with your understanding. We're building this road. Nothing else matters. We're getting it done on time. Period.
Yeah.
Then you can have a parade.
Yeah. Well, on every side of a civil war, especially this one, you have opportunists that there are still in this book and in any post-conflict society, you still have Jeeps full of opportunists that have a handful of AKs, and they decide, and they've got, you know, they say if you have a Jeep, some guns, and a business card, you have a revolution, you know, or you have a rebellion. And there are all of those guys that are always working different angles.
And it's, again, very partially funny but sad. Pardon me for saying so, but I think that this book takes place near the end of the world.
I wanted there to be that tension where you, and again, that sort of sense of creeping dread where every worst thing is possible. It's happened, and what rational reason could we have for expecting it to be over, you know, the worst behind us? And, you know, countries do leave decades of civil war. We have positive developments. I just was talking to an Eritrean acquaintance about all these reunitings that are happening between families in Eritrea and Ethiopia, and decades of separations with all of these siblings, cousins, families. And so, you know, there are times that I guess reunions are possible, progress is possible, something that can give us hope. And I do go through life as a hopeful person. I really do. I can't shake it. I do tend to look that way. At the same time, I don't know why I'm occasionally drawn to these dystopian stories. And in a way, there's a through line between some of the people in the circle who don't know all the ill that they are giving the world, even though they're just a little cog in the machine, but the machine that they're making is breaking the world. And in this case, you have just two men, contractors, but, you know, we think that they are the exploiters or they are the opportunists, but there's always a bigger fish that has his own designs. And in this case, and in so many cases, whether it's somebody helping to build a Chinese port in Malaysia or Pakistan, you know, building a road there or whatever, there are plans afoot that are far exceed the scope of most of our imaginations. And so I'm interested in this. This moment in history, I think, is a fascinating one.
I've been talking with Dave Eggers, author most recently of The Parade, published by Knopf. I do want to say that the book feels like a book that has 12 years of thought and care devoted to it. It reads that way, and it's really a pleasure to read it. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Michael.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, really wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you can listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer and assistant, Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Dave Eggers is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.